Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 8th on the West Coast, now September the 9th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those who are listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, either live or in an archive, and I want to thank all the people that sent messages on the show last night. We're talking about some truths. Some are rather difficult for the average person to wrap their mind around, if you want to use that term, primarily because these topics generally are taboo. I mean, they get to the truth. And that's what we're going to talk about, the pretty much the same topic, but I want to start off the show by delivering a message that comes from the late, great Tennessee Ernie Ford, who's watching over us right this very moment.
Obama got elected, now there is no end. The Democrats who want to tax and spend us into bankruptcy with a tax cheat running our treasury. You spend $2 trillion, what do you get? No recovery, but deeper in debt. St. Peter better call me, for it's too late. I owe my soul to the welfare state. Obama is a leftist, this he can't deny. Governed from the center was a great big lie. Karl Marx's manifesto is his playbook, and you and me soon will be on the hook. You're spending $2 trillion in unsecured cash. Soon the dollar will be pure trash. Our bondholders we have to appease. We owe our soul to the red Chinese. Obama and his people are making a mess. Bernanke's fired up the printing press, printing money that don't exist. No wonder America is getting peeved. You spend $2 trillion, they ain't done yet. Obama and Pelosi piling up the debt. I work hard for my money, this I don't deserve. We owe our souls to the Federal Reserve.
And that's Tennessee Ernie Ford, or should we say the ghost of Tennessee Ernie Ford, checking out what's really going down on planet Earth. That was 2 trillion tons, by the way. Lyrics credits go to Jim Gossett and Lars Larson of Westwood One Radio. So we thank them for that message. That song's been out for quite some time, and I ran across it and I thought, you know, this is right on point because it hasn't changed. So with that, I invite back to Evident Footprints, a regular. This is always a fun time for me because he knows lots of things about a lot of different topics. He's a historian. He is a health scientist. He's an herbalist. All these things with the letter H. he's a former chemist. Worked in the, we could say, in the computer technology industry. And also he's a musician. My good friend, and I tonight are going to talk about something else he's quite expert in. First, let's bring him on, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Don. Thank you. Great to be back.
How did you like Ernie's song there?
Oh, yeah, very much. Excellent. Nice work. And right to the point. And I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. On last night's show, Dr. Mike Castle and I took up a topic, and we were talking about the beings that pull the strings behind the scenes. And there's no beating around this issue. I mean, you can't escape it. Every single thing that you research or look into in any great depth takes you to the same source. Mm-hmm. All of the repressive activities that are going on around the world, whether it's corporations, banks, pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, institutions of education, and their multidimensional ways of functioning, because on one hand they're teaching students who are paying exorbitant amounts of money basically just what they want them to know, and let's say advancements in technology are discouraged or they are militarized. We have problems all throughout the educational system. Kids don't graduate from school able to read or do math. Many dropouts. There's like 7 kids drop out of school every second across the country. You know, we're talking about high school, but I suppose there's probably some that are even dropping out of middle school. And this is encouraged. Teachers have been paid large sums of money to keep this program going. And, of course, the kids don't see that. These are salaries paid to the teachers and principals and really people who were probably not all that necessary in a school environment, but they've created control through the federal government and the National Education Association, which is run basically by SRI, Stanford Research Institute. Nothing seems to be functioning with any integrity, and there's always the same source. When you really go back into time or go back into history or even look at what's going on now, it's the same group.
Absolutely correct, Don. And only good students of history understand that and come finally draw that conclusion. And so that's absolutely how it really is. And it gets deep and it can be overwhelming. A lot of people may not want to hear the whole truth, but of course, that's what it's all about. If you have the whole truth, you have a great understanding and awareness of the situation at hand. And therefore, at least give you an ability to maneuver through it all. Maybe even gain an upper hand over a system designed and intended to basically crush us.
Mm-hmm. And it's a system based on fear, isn't it? It's intended
Absolutely.
To keep us in a state of fear,
Absolutely.
Which is crippling to the average person.
Yes, it is, because people, you know, and naturally, we don't want to dwell on these kinds of things because it gets heavy on the psyche. It gets heavy on even the emotions. And so, therefore, you know, it's what you would say maybe like macabre. Is that the term?
Macabre.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's just that unsettling. So naturally, we don't want to really know about it, but at the same time, you have to pursue the truth wherever it leads. You have to pursue it because it's only through the truth that we can be free, just as our good Lord Jesus taught.
Yes. Well, the reason I'm talking about this, and it's multifold, Because in reality, Michael, this is who's pulling the strings. And that's a lot for somebody to grasp. I went through an introduction last night, basically, talking about the word consumer and the different ways the realities that are programmed into us are all found in that one word, the different definitions of that one word. There's got to be 30 or 40 different words that represent consumer or consume. Mm-hmm. And since this either we're consuming or we're penalized for consuming, we're taxed for consuming, we pay a price for consuming.
And at the same time, we're told to consume.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're programmed to think that that's the reality on this planet.
You know, ever since 9/11 with G.W. Bush, and I hear the word consumed on, you know, I always think of what he said. After 9/11, he was basically telling us, it's okay, everything's all right, keep consuming, keep consuming. He actually said that, you know, just like that. And it was hilarious, because there's the dead giveaway. Hello, Americans, this is what your president thinks of you. You're not an individual with freedoms. You're a consumer in their corporate world system.
Yes. And a lot of that is cloaked in language. A lot of that is cloaked in customs. And this topic that we're even discussing is generally considered taboo. In certain circles, it's absolutely taboo.
Absolutely, yes, Don, because you are now getting to the kernel, the center of pretty much the answers to everything. And that's why the closer you get to that main target, the more flack you're going to take, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I don't know if you've gotten any, but I can tell you there are people, I know quite a few people that are getting flack. So that means we're over the target.
Yes.
We've revealed the truth. And I said on a couple of shows this week, you know, the first thing is for people to know the truth. When you know the truth, you begin to know yourself. And you begin to understand why you're here, the purpose of life. And certainly you see all of the other possible outcomes of a life that's not interfered with, especially by someone who would just as soon eat you or drink your blood.
Well, there you go, Don. And there's your fundamental evidence and proof of fear being the primary state conditioning that we are born into. And I always explain to everyone, I say, you don't believe that fear is the primary, it's an energy that a certain entity actually uses as food for its sustenance. So just go out in nature and just lay low and observe wildlife, birds, whatever it is, animals, and notice that as they eat something, they are not relaxed, kicked back with their feet up in the air, just chomping away, chewing on something, and letting their mind idle and just run astray. No. Every little peck, every little nibble, they look around for something that's going to jump on them, pounce on them, and kill them and eat them. They're in perpetual fear, constantly, their whole lives. And the only ones that aren't so much are the predators themselves at the quote-unquote top of the food chain, because they don't really have much hunting them down 24/7. And so fear is a food, technically a food for a certain type of entity, and they actually thrive on it.
Yes, they thrive on the adrenaline, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Now, not that we're trying to sound more macabre, but this has a basis in scientific fact, and it has a basis in metaphysics, and wouldn't say religion, because this is a political ideology that comes from another part of our galaxy. That's all it is.
Well, it comes from somewhere.
And it's manifested through beings that that have mastered some of the dimensional shifts.
Well, there you go.
That's where the term shape shifter comes from. It's a frequency adjustment.
We're spiritual beings living in a multidimensional reality, and that's just how it is. And we have to always acknowledge and be aware consistently that we are a spiritual being in a material body, having a physical existence experience, but we are a spiritual being. We are not just a physical being. And unfortunately, modern man has been allowed himself to be conditioned into accepting that he is just this physical entity with really out any spiritual component. And that's a major flaw, because then you're denying your real nature, and therefore a power that will save you if you find it and discover it and bring it into your sphere of activity.
Yes. Wouldn't you say it's because of the creation of the false ego and then the programming of that ego?
Absolutely correct, Don. And the way I would actually explain it, which would give somebody a little more insight as to what you mean by what you just said. And technically, our mind itself is installed by this foreign entity. Okay, we have two natures, as the Lord taught, a higher self and a lower self. And, you know, if you think back to those old cartoons from the 60s, and sometimes where it would show in the cartoon a little kid or a person trying to make a decision. But there's a good angel in one ear, and there's a bad angel in the other ear, trying to make them to decide either way. And so that really does capture the ultimate situation that we are in. Our mind, our lower nature mind, is an installation by this foreign entity. And that's how they condition us and keep us in this constant state of fear and control. But we also have access to a higher mind. And this higher mind is from our Creator himself. And so that's really what it comes down to. And we have to learn to control our mind, what thoughts we're going to allow to enter, what thoughts we will entertain, and what thoughts we will not entertain at all. And so that's part of our challenge as human beings today, to conquer ourselves. The only real enemy is internal. It's installed, and we have to eliminate it. And this is where I would say that one of the biggest, most important teachings that the Lord taught, which is not even in the Bible, is you have to kill your mortal nature before it kills you. And you say, what does that mean? Well, it's simple. Most people, they don't die. They kill themselves. Look around you. Look at everybody that you've seen die from this or that. All self-induced, because their mortal nature had control over them. And the mortal nature is extremely defective and faulty.
Yes, yes, that's correct. Also, we have a tendency on occasion to inhale our coffee. So that's recommended that you don't do that, especially when your mic is on. I had some coffee go down my windpipe. So. I agree with what you're saying. You know, the system as it's been designed and it's being ratcheted up, because there's an understanding and an awareness, a consciousness of this process and what has been done to us, which is coming to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And it was as if it was unanticipated, but maybe in a sense they knew this probably would happen, and they would deal with it as it was happening. So
right.
They've gotten rather impatient. suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are 9 years after 9/11. In fact, in two more days, it'll be 9 years.
Yeah, hard to believe already. But, Don, that's absolutely correct. And if I may expand on that a little bit, because this gradual increase in awareness that's gaining momentum here on the planet, more and more people coming to some self-realizations finally. And what's driving that? How's this coming about? Well, that's the Creator's activity. And there's been a huge battle going on since time began, when man was created. And it's all about God and the good angels and Satan and the fallen angels. It's all a spiritual thing. And so at the same time, while the evil forces down here have obviously gained major ground and are really close to establishing a hellish system on the whole planet.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, we can see these forces, activities coming about that are impeding them and coming out of nowhere, seemingly. And that's how God is, you know, comes out of nowhere, but he gets things happening quick. And so that's ultimately where we are right now and what's going on around us.
Yes. Now, this isn't something new for a lot of listeners. And, you know, we have young people around the world that listen to the show at various times of the day. In fact, on the other side of the world, it's daytime right now. It's the afternoon. They may be in school, but from what I hear, a lot of people are tuning in. So they're enjoying the topics that we're talking about. They're enjoying the fact that they're hearing some things that they probably questioned themselves and maybe couldn't find answers to. And the younger people weren't around. They didn't grow up learning a lot of the things that we learned when we were in school. In fact, I think if you went and read a textbook right now, you'd probably be appalled at how much has been edited out of world history.
Oh, yeah.
Or American history.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there was definitely something going on in the late, let's say, 1930s onward, and ever since World War II, ever since they basically set off two atomic weapons
mm-hmm.
over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, at the end of World War II, after the Japanese had already surrendered. In fact, they did that. So that was
yes.
more of a galactic event. And I
think, yeah, go ahead.
I think the wheels started turning. But there was
yes, contact for sure.
before that happened. And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, Don, you're absolutely right. And there's been a lot of contact going on in the 1900s, early 1900s, and we can look at men like Tesla and other great minds also coming out of nowhere with phenomenal inventions. And that brings us into the 30s. Of course, you've covered Tesla so many times, and I'm sure your audience is very familiar with Tesla's history and his demise. J.P. Morgan ruined him, suppressing all his great technologies, cutting us off from it, and ruining the great man. And but over in Germany, technological activities were booming secretly. And as far as I've just learned, I've been studying some books by Joseph Farrell that I finally acquired and been studying. They're excellent books about the Nazis, the Black Sun, some mm-hmm. technologies of the Nazis. And they're excellent books. They are technical for the most part, loaded with information. You have to study it many times to really absorb and gain the big picture. But once you do, you come to terms with the fact that, no question about it, the Nazis were so advanced. That is why they brought them over here secretly under Operation Paperclip. And the ones we know about, like Wernher von Braun getting us to the moon and stuff, these guys were smart men, but they were more of the outer shell of technicians and brains that they brought over. They brought over an inner circle of scientists and brains that were into the esoteric technologies, where Wernher von Braun was basically exoteric, mainly rocket launching and propulsion using power of rocketry explosions. But the inner circle pursuing esoteric technology, they were actually into the alchemical processes of creating what may be called exotic matter, which we call today pretty much like radioactive isotopes. And it looks like the Nazis did have an A-bomb and even more. Looks like why they didn't use it is one of the big questions, but it may be just due to that. That wasn't the real amazing weapon that they were pursuing. To them, that was just a detonator for a really monstrous weapon. And the Japanese, apparently, Don, because they were allies with the Nazis, had a lot of this technology. And from Joseph Farrell's perspective, which I respect a lot because his books are very impressive, and it looks like the Japanese had it too with the A-bomb, and we were concerned that they were going to drop it on us first, and so they wanted to make sure we dropped it on them before they could drop it on us. And that would explain, that would give us a whole new perception of explaining why Truman went for it when we were being told that they wanted to surrender. But they may not have been really wanting to surrender, just knowing that they had this technology that they were just trying to get it basically launched. And so one thing's for sure, they had tremendous technology advances in that time frame, which are stunning. Why they didn't use it all is a whole nother perplexing question. And the bottom line seems to come back to what I learned years ago when I learned about like a Schweinfurt raid where the Nazis unleashed UFO anti-gravity disks. And then immediately they never really used them after that. And that was because they were told not to by their controllers. Now, who are their controllers? Well, ultimately, at the physical level, it's the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers who were financing them and wanted to use this technology at a more appropriate time to control the whole world when they felt their timing was best for the New World Order, which the Nazis used as a slogan quite often, Hitler, New World Order slogan. And so I think ultimately that's why the Nazis didn't use all this amazing technology, was because of the fact that they were told not to use it anymore. And of course, the reason being that if it fell into ally hands, it would ultimately get into civilian hands. And now these controllers that I just mentioned would not have an upper hand of very superior technology over us when the time came to lay down the iron boot.
Yes, now we know also that Roosevelt gave the Russians half of our enriched uranium. Mm-hmm. I think we had 4 pounds or 4 kilos. I forget what it was, but yeah. I think it was 4 pounds. And we gave them half of that. And the plans to build a bomb as well as nuclear reactors and the manufacturing facilities. So
that's all true, but guess what, Don? According to Joseph Farrell, we couldn't even do our A-bomb until we acquired the fissionable material from the Nazis when they started sneaking them in at the close of the war. And so we're told Oppenheimer and all these guys were able to pull off an A-bomb, but they really weren't, Don. The Nazis had it figured out, but these guys didn't. And from the Nazis, one of the real driving motivational forces was they were rejecting the linear physics of the what they called the Jewish science, Einstein science, and they broke into what is now known as quantum mechanics way before anybody else did, and so there's so much more to all this that I've just got some more insight to. And it all comes leading back to the Nazis. And, of course, what was the driving force behind the Nazis? And people will think Hitler, but, of course, Hitler was just another puppet installed.
Mm-hmm.
Who had a certain ability to sway the masses, and that's what they groomed him to do.
He was the short mustached Mac Daddy.
That's absolutely correct. and very fanatical, and they used the what is known as the will to power, which means that all you need is determination to acquire power and. The means justify the ends, which is ultimately evil.
Yeah. Now, what made this feasible, for those that aren't familiar with this, is that the New York banks, the central banks, were in the business of being in war and profiting from this. So they financed all this. And
every single one.
Yes. And for that favor, that technology and the manpower was brought here, but that was done not as national security. That was done to take over this country.
You got it done. Ultimately, you study the Nazis' rapid rise, and in 12 years became really phenomenons when it came to technology. There is no disputing that. And then all of a sudden, it's like a plug was pulled.
Yes.
And everything falls apart on them. And that's right, because the timing wasn't right for them, the controllers, the Rockefellers and Schwarzschild banksters. Timing wasn't quite right yet to implement their new world order, but the technology they had to keep secret and continue to advance it, because as phenomenal as it was then, now they've got it pretty much perfected in every respect. The mind control abilities, very advanced technologies for energy production and machinery, craft that can literally travel like thousands of miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
and have extremely high altitude, and of course outer space. And Wernher von Braun, that was his ultimate with the Nazis. They were looking at ultimate space, control of space and space warfare, setting up satellites up in space, and having the means of controlling the Earth from space. And that's exactly where we picked up when we took them over, when we brought them over here.
Yes. You know, I came across an article. I'm going to look for it. I don't have it right at my fingertips. But came across a very old article from 1916 about Nikola Tesla and the fact that he was basically penniless at that time. The New York Times reported that he, according to his statement in court, here it is. I should read this. Would you like to hear it? It's not too long.
Yeah, is this after Edison fired him? I think it is.
Yeah, this is long after. Long, long after that.
What year?
This article came out in came out March 18th, 1916 was.
Oh, 1916?
Yes.
Okay, so still quite a ways after him getting fired by or quitting Edison, actually. Go ahead.
Yes, okay. It's entitled, Tesla Has Only Credit. Inventor at Supplementary Inquiry Denies Owning Anything. Testimony given by Nikola Tesla, the electrical inventor, in a supplementary proceeding begun by the city to collect a judgment for $935 for personal taxes was filed yesterday with County Clerk Schneider. Mr. Tesla said under oath that he was penniless and had been living on credit. His home is the Waldorf. He was asked, how do you live? Mostly on credit, he replied. I have a bill at the Waldorf that I have not paid for several years. Are there any other judgments against you? Scores of them. Anybody owe you any money? No, sir. Have you any jewelry? No, sir. Jewelry I abhor. Mr. Tesla said he was the president and treasurer of the Tesla Company of 8th West 40th Street. The company was organized in 1895 with $5,000 capital, which was afterward increased to $500,000. He owned 9/10 of the stock, but he said it had all been pledged between 1898 and 1902 inclusive. Asked if the company was earning anything, Mr. Tesla replied that its income was about $350 or $400 a month, just enough to pay expenses. The company started with 200 patents, but all of them, except a few, had run out or had been lost for non-payment of fees. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Asked with whom he had pledged his stock, Mr. Tesla replied that it was given to bankers, to friends, to judgment creditors, to two friends, and others. Mr. Tesla said that he owned no real estate in this country and that he had no automobiles or any property whatever. Once he had $1,000 in a trust company, but that was gone. The secretary of his company, he said, was George Scherf, a bookkeeper employed at 17 Battery Place. By the way, I discovered that through some very serious research. I wish I would have had this article.
Wow.
I spent months on that. Among the directors of the company were Diaz Brutago and Fritz Lowenstein. Justice Finch of the Supreme Court appointed Robert McMarsh receiver for Mr. Tesla. Now, the man, we know of at least 700 patents, and there may have been over 1,000, easily. There could have been 1,500 patents even.
Mm-hmm,
now, we don't know that, so I'm merely speculating. But by 1916, he had 200. Mm-hmm. That's still quite a bit.
Very impressive.
Than many other people's lifetimes. And he was still quite young then.
Right.
So I thought you'd find that interesting.
Where did
those inventions go, Michael?
That's exactly right, Don. Somebody was controlling this man, and unfortunately, the dark forces zeroed in on him, and of course, you know, financed him because he needed financing to pursue his dreams, all his great ideas. And unfortunately, it was dark, sinister forces, primarily through J.P. Morgan as the principal financer that dealt with Tesla directly. And obviously, they were stealing from this guy, tripping him up constantly, and then finally just cut him off when they had enough of him because he was limitless with his ideas and his abilities to invent great technologies. And Americans don't appreciate that pretty much everything we have electronically comes from just to drive your car with your alternator. That's a Tesla generator. The cathode ray tube. And all your AC wiring.
Mm-hmm.
And Niagara Falls and the radio. How can you overlook the radio?
I'm getting some messages from some of the listeners here. I want to bring up a point because this question was basically something I wanted to bring up. you know, Tesla allegedly had about a $20,000 bill, and his mentor was Mr. Astor, who died in the sinking of the Titanic. And so they allowed him, because of who he was, they allowed him to stay there, and they knew that he should have been coming into lots of money.
Yes.
On one end, I suspected, and George H. Scherf, a.k.a. Prescott Bush, let me repeat that, George H. Scherf Sr. and Prescott Bush were the same person, stealing that money, funneling that money and the inventions through the bank, Union Banking Corporation. And they knew they were doing something in 1942. They were cited for doing business under the Trading with the Enemy Act.
Right.
And allegedly froze their assets.
There's your substantial Nazi connection.
Yes, I doubt that they actually did that. They just made the announcement that they did that. Because after all, war is a racket.
Yep, and Tesla was like a rock star movie star of today with fame and notoriety back in that era, and all the more rationale why he was allowed to stay at the Waldorf like that indefinitely, because, like you said, Don, they knew the guy had to be coming into money. He was phenomenal.
Or is it possible, and one of our listeners asked this question, this is speculation, but I'm inclined to think that this might be right on the money, that he was actually supplying them, the Waldorf Astoria, with electricity. And maybe
for free.
Free electricity, okay? That might have been why he was allowed to stay there and build up such a huge bill, you know, in those
Something
days.
To that.
In 1916, $20,000 is a lot of money. It wasn't
That's right.
mentioned in this article, but we know that historically.
Yep.
Also, his accountant was working for the Union Sulphur Company. 17 Battery Place is the Rockefellers
mm-hmm.
Union Sulphur Company.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the business manager and the accountant of Nikola Tesla working for the enemy.
And here's the Rockefeller connection, and how convenient, all situated in such close proximity to each other.
Yes. Yes. Now, one of Tesla's good friends was none other than Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens.
That's true.
And they hung out together quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tesla was a ladies' man. He went out and wined and dined. And he was entitled to that. The man should have been a billionaire.
Absolutely.
He should have been a billionaire. He was that prolific.
He built the Niagara Falls for Westinghouse. That's shortly after that is when Morgan cut him off and ruined him.
Yes. Now,
and he ripped up contracts with Westinghouse, which were in the millions of dollars.
Yes.
He was really an amazing guy. Money meant nothing to him.
Yes. I didn't mean to cut you off there. Tesla also spoke much about life on other planets.
Mm-hmm.
And the means of getting there and developed a lot of technology. Even, you know, the Philadelphia experiment used the Utrons that he had developed to teleport a whole ship. And that went awry because Tesla had backed out of that. He didn't want to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And those Utrons, according to Otto Skorzeny, were stolen by Reinhard Galen and Skorzeny and given to the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
So that fits the accounts of them having ships and that. But Tesla, in speculating, I think he'd hear a message something like this in his higher consciousness.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
Now,
so good.
Now you may wonder why I played that. It's that simple.
Yeah.
When thinking outside the box, it's that simple. The very reason I did that promo for the network was to get that message out there that it's not something to fear. You see, it's not something to fear.
No, we're going to encounter things that will literally shake us down to the core of our being. Sooner or later, we all have to come to terms with the forces that are all around us, and those that are evil and malicious will have a fearful effect. However, we have to learn to overcome that, not to allow that to become us. We have to always operate and dwell from the positive side of life where real power operates, and that power is technically known as love, the love principle, and we won't get trapped in the fear mode that exist out there and all around us. So, you know, that's just how it is for us as living sentient beings in a vast creation with a history to it that is older than our ancestors are. And so, no question about it that we all will have to come to terms with it. The sooner the better as far as individual growth goes, because we can deal with it finally. You know, like when everybody just starts to come up to speed with the New World Order and, you know, I can't take anymore. I'm getting circuit overload. You know, I get nervous. I'm getting stressed. I'm getting headaches. You know, it's scaring me. And you have to deal with that and overcome that or it will consume you. You can't avoid it. This is the world we're in. This is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Deal with it and overcome it. And then it won't ever be able to really get to you when they're bombarding everybody with it.
Yes. Now, we have another question that came through. One of our listeners is asking about the Nazis. He's asking if you believe, but, I mean, you know. So he's asking about the Nazis moving to Antarctica mm-hmm. and Argentina. But that question goes a lot further than that. We could do a whole show sure. on that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's true that they did.
Absolutely. And looks like maybe up in northern Canada area, like, rather Arctic, not Canada, but Arctic, the northern Arctic area as well, they might have a base as well. We were talking about the Keksberg incident and how it's an acorn-shaped craft crashing into Pennsylvania in 64. Spotted over Ohio, coming out of over northern Canada into our country, and then over Ohio, where it pauses in the air, actually pauses now, and then changes direction and crashes in Pennsylvania in a remote area, Keksberg. And the shape of it was a acorn description, which fits with this mysterious technology known as the bell that the Nazis had.
Mm-hmm.
And so since that was coming out of the Arctic area, traversing over Canada, then into our country. So it looks like the Nazis are pretty much established everywhere.
Oh, they were in Paraguay and Brazil as well.
Sure. Big time down South America, big time. But they clearly left behind a network, an operating network,
yes.
where we're led to believe, you know, they pretty much broke it all up, destroyed them. Yeah, we snuck in some of them, but we pretty much destroyed the Nazi empire regime. But that's not true. The network and these old stories and the old movies like the Odessa File and some other ones about the boys from Brazil, I think, with Gregory Peck.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this, of course, all these Hollywood stories based on this knowledge, that they were well aware of that the Nazis continue. Their network is in place and they seem to be around the globe. They're probably also in the Middle East in some degrees. They were working with Muslims. Egypt was a very hot spot for them, sure. as well as Tibet.
Yeah. And Turkey. In fact, in Germany, they have a lot of immigration from Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this relationship that's been there. But that has another dimension to it, you see, because we get into the whole issue of Zionism and the Zionists who are working hand in hand with the reptilians. And they are. Many of them are reptilians. We've talked about this. We're not the only ones talking about this topic.
Yes, the reptilians are basically at the physical level, the highest entity that is promulgating a controlling, satanic, evil kind of activity, sinister activity.
Yeah. And this goes on their home planet, too. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure they're warlike beings.
Yes.
Well, ultimately, they really don't have a sense of humor. They're just pretty much warlike. And so I'm sure you know, they fight amongst themselves quite a bit, too.
Hey, there was this reptilian that walked into a bar. You know? They don't have a sense of humor. We can tell jokes all night, can't we?
I think, I think, you know, if you want to get a feel for them, it's probably like the Klingons in the Star Trek sagas.
Yes. I couldn't
Very warlike.
Think of the name yesterday.
I couldn't. What's that? Did you just mention that yesterday?
I couldn't. Well, we were talking about, you know, the types of beings that are depicted in the Star Trek TV show and the movies and that, but I couldn't think of the Klingons for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have to just think static electricity, Klingons. And
yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, you know, Don, what's very interesting, I mean, as if any of this isn't, gets more interesting with the Germans and the Nazis, because we know about the Thule's, the Gesellschaft, and all these secret societies that the Nazis were founded upon. And as it turns out, there was a more older secret society in Germany, coming out of Bavaria, mind you,
mm-hmm.
and it was called the Society of Lizards. And they were already pursuing this science that was more advanced than the current Einstein linear physics science of the time. They were already pursuing this before the Nazi Party really came to power. And so they are a mysterious organization that may be at the pinnacle of all secret organizations that even the Illuminati is under.
Mm-hmm. Well, metaphysics was a big aspect of how they put that whole thing together. It was all planned around ancient metaphysics that they got from Tibet.
And Egypt.
Yeah. Yes.
And Egypt, too.
Yeah,
they were big in Egypt.
They were big into symbology.
Right.
Using the metaphysical symbols on a lot of their insignia.
That's correct.
The swastika is actually inverted. And there's some of its decoration as the wheel of a fortune, or you could almost say the wheel of life in a sense, was corrupted and used for the swastika.
Right.
But it's in metaphysics, it's a symbol of prosperity. Certainly not through war. It has nothing to do with war, but it was used in its opposite, a dichotomy or a dialectic.
Yeah, they reversed it.
Yes, which has the opposite effect on the subconscious of those that are being exposed to the propaganda.
Well, there you go, Don. And that's because they were well aware already of the morphogenetic grid,
mm-hmm.
which Montauk, Long Island, is a key center of in our hemisphere.
Now we're getting into an aspect of this that sort of ties the technology and the metaphysics and all of this Star Trek stuff together, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. No question about it. And there was a lot of Nazi activity in Montauk, Long Island prior to World War II. Prior.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that a lot of people may not be aware of. Right in our own backyard here.
Yeah, we had the Montauk Indians there, and the chief, the family who that was in power.
Right, the ruling family.
Was the Pharaohs.
That was their name.
And there's a mystical, metaphysical connection to Egypt and Montauk.
Absolutely, absolutely. In many respects, and you know, Thomas Jefferson was keen on that. He studied the Montauks for a while, and actually they had a very rare language, and he did his best to actually record it, to preserve it. And they say it was a good job for a guy back in that time frame, but he still didn't capture it quite enough to preserve it. But there's something very mysterious about Montauk, Long Island, and the Montauk natives there. Obviously, the family lineage of chiefs with the last name of Pharaoh,
mm-hmm.
and also reports of pyramids
mm-hmm.
along the coastline of Montauk And but just the tops jetting up through the sand, and that the military, the government, in the early 1900s, had them busted up so they weren't so obvious. And Montauk is a fascinating topic all on its own. You could go weeks on that one as well. And but it all ties in with the Nazis, the morphogenetic grid, which they were keen on. And they were trying to exert their influence over the globe using the morphogenetic grid with their symbolism and their ideas, their philosophy, because the morphogenetic grid is a mental thing. It's a mental grid. And so therefore they were trying to influence it at the mental level.
Now, you know, people seem, or they tend to associate what the Nazis did in science with the war, as if that's the only time anything was ever done. In fact, they had been doing a lot of this before they did go to war, and a lot afterward, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was moved around to other parts. Let's not forget that they came to the United States as well. Looking at who would pull the strings, you know, where would they get their alien technology from? That would be,
well, there you go, Don.
Question,
right?
Because this was far more advanced than anything that had been made available.
That's very good, Don. And this is where Joseph Farrell, when you study his works, which are excellent, but he's approaching it from a technical a perspective primarily, and he's got quite a few books. They're all big volumes. They're all excellent. And he does occasionally touch upon the spiritual activities surrounding all these technological pursuits, but he doesn't get into it too much because he wants to remain mainly in the technical facts that he was able to acquire,
mm-hmm.
and his books are great for that. But there's your key question, Don. You see, now, how were the Nazis really able to get into this pursuit of a sophisticated technology for its time? And it was through black magic practices. This is where Aleister Crowley comes in, and these secret societies that were using various black magic techniques, and they were able to somehow make multidimensional contacts with entities that apparently became allies to them. And I just lost, there was a point I was going to make on that, Don, but...
Well, you were talking about the Nazis making contact with other entities. And
right. And they were in order to acquire this multidimensional contact, so they had the black magic approach, okay, but also they were trying to use technology to advance it even more.
Yeah, and I think the two went hand in hand, and
they did, and that's where using new physics, which enabled them to create new energies, new matter, exotic matter, which are basically radioactive isotopes, and they were consuming tremendous power, like in the city in Silesia, which is Czechoslovakia, Poland border area. That's where they had one of their major plants, what they called the Buna plant, supposedly a rubber plant making rubber, synthetic rubber for their war production. However, the facts are no rubber ever came out of that plant. And yet the plant was so huge and vast that it consumed at the time as much electricity as maybe modern New York City. So that's a major enigma. How can that be? What were they doing? And it looks like this is one of the main places where they were pursuing very advanced technologies. And this Bell technology was part of it. And they were able to rip affect space-time continuums using vortices.
Mm-hmm.
Generated by tremendous high electromagnetic fields. And that's probably, they were actually able to get rifts in dimensions, which probably enabled them to establish contact much better with their entities, these entities that became their allies. And so, yep, the black magic and the technology with them was all hand in hand. That's why technically, pardon the pun, their technology is technology of death. They're acquiring powers in an illegal way, in a spiritual illegal way.
They're violating universal law, and
precisely.
And they're destructive.
Precisely. Precisely. Where the law, and this is why the Nazis at the higher ups were into the metaphysics. They despised Jesus. They've considered him. They knew he had tremendous power, but he wouldn't use it for anything selfish. You see? And they despised him for that. And where the Lord taught us, seek ye the kingdom of heaven first, and then all things will be given unto thee. They said, no way. We're going to get the kingdom of heaven any way we want it. Because the kingdom of heaven is a power. It's not a place. So, that's basically the gist.
These are satanic entities, if you want to use a term to describe
it. That's correct.
Okay. I mean, I will say that, but you're certainly free to disagree with.
Oh, no, of course, because they are basically now in rapport with fallen angels and their minions. And that's all satanic.
Yes, and then you have to look at the systems that were developed. Look at the pharmaceutical industry mm-hmm. and the role that corporations like IG Farben played all across the board. Or the Thiessens. You don't hear much about the Thiessens. You know,
right.
That's a big part of it.
Sure.
And
He's a financer, Thiessen. He was mm-hmm. a major German steel magnate, financing the Nazis through Wall Street over here in New York. And so he was a money man for them, one of the money men.
And see, many of the people that owned the oil companies, and the Rockefellers were a major oil company, or the mines like the aluminum production that was required to manufacture machinery and weapons and all of that, and steel the same way. Everything went into the pockets of these big corporations and the banks that mm-hmm. financed them, and they had their own false flag events that led up to all of this. But it keeps coming back to, why would people, what about them would be so evil? What would cause them to, you can say, well, it's always been that way. Well, there's a force here. There's a political ideology from another planet that has come here. And mm-hmm. over many thousands of years, the generation after generation has been conditioned to adapt to it. And this has been going on a lot longer than just, the middle of or the first part of the 20th century.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back in the Lord's time when he was walking the earth, he accused the current controllers of that region in the Middle East as the sons of the viper.
Yeah. Yeah. Vipers are reptilian.
There you go.
So it keeps coming back to that, doesn't it? Keeps coming back.
Every time you follow truth, that's where it's going to lead you to, the ultimate cause behind everything.
Now, one wonders, are we saying, or are you saying that the Nazis likely got their technology from those beings that came here?
Well, they had to get their ideas from some source, and of course I'm convinced it was through black magic activity that they were able to conceive and perceive of a new science that was way ahead of its time. And so this society of lizards, whoever they are, very mysterious, ancient organization, were the progenitors of the Nazi regime and directed them in this area of endeavor. So, we're, so it's coming, these ideas are coming from somewhere. And were they able to just originate them on their own? Usually doesn't happen like that. The ideas come from somewhere. We just receive them. We are able to tune in and acquire that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But to say, like, we really think of the idea, we create the idea, I don't know about that. I think pretty much all ideas come from another source, and we're able to just tune into it and receive it.
Yes. Well, in the very late 1800s, you know, the 1890s, Tesla was talking about life on Mars.
Mm-hmm, right.
He was talking about it with a familiarity of knowing exactly how one gets there, the various ways one could get there, and that somebody was there.
Yes, he actually claimed to be in rapport communications.
So,
but, you know, interestingly, as I learned about that, over time, according to the source that I learned this from, I'm trying to recall which source that was, and Tesla began to even wonder, he was getting more of a feel that the signals were coming from the Earth itself, the interior of the Earth. Now, the Nazis were very big into the hollow Earth theory, too.
Mm-hmm.
They even had some crazy ideas, like Himmler had a crazy notion of that, which was absurd, really. But nonetheless, they were pursuing all their technologies based on these type of concepts. The Black Sun, their secret emblem, not the swastika, but the Black Sun. And it refers to either a sun in the center of the in the Earth, or the sun in the center of the universe that influences all things. It's hidden. It's not seen, but it's the main influence behind all things, hence the Black Sun. And so Tesla was apparently over time wondering if these signals were actually coming from the interior of the Earth as well. Now, possibly, Don, he was picking up signals from both, externally from Mars as well as internally too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, when I contemplate somebody, and there was more than one villain in World War II, but history likes to focus on Hitler for a lot of reasons. But, you know, do you think it was as simple as the Rothschild banking family calling him up and saying, hey, Addy, we want to make some money. Why don't you start a war? Just start a war. We'll help you out. We'll finance it. You know, just get crazy. It doesn't exactly work that way, does it?
No. Even though, as they set up the scenario to make all that happen, that's part of their agenda, of course.
I don't doubt that, no.
Right, that's right. But initially, that's not their main line of approach.
No, I'm
to get these guys motivated.
I'm being a bit facetious.
Oh.
There's a lot of mind control. There's a lot of preparation. There's a lot of programming that has
sure.
to play.
You got it. And Hitler was mind controlled to some degree himself by these higher ups that controlled him.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And he had those in the Nazi party who controlled him.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the short-legged Mac Daddy is controlled today.
Absolutely. Nothing's changed on that front.
And he was a foreigner. He was someone from another country.
Mm-hmm.
It was from Austria. Here we are. We have another character from Austria. Isn't that
amazing? You got it.
You had two guys from Austria fighting each other in Germany.
You got it. And also, you had a guy come over from Austria telling the Germans they're the greatest, and that blonde, blue-eyed is the future. And he's not even blonde. And I don't think he was blue-eyed. Maybe he was, though. I'm not sure about that, but he wasn't blonde, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so here you have now Obama acting like he's one of us when he's clearly not one of us. He's not an American. He's not an American with Christian heritage values. He's totally the opposite. He's a foreigner with Muslim values and politically communist values. He's promoting Mao Zedong as a great guy, just like David Rockefeller, his controller. or his sugar daddy, rather. I think it's a big new Brzezinski's his main controller. And so you have a lot of commonalities here, Don, between the old dictator Hitler and this new loser we have that wants to be one.
Yeah, when you think that all these people that orchestrated World War II are still alive, by and large. You know, it's the same agenda. And I'm not saying that World War III has to happen, but they're, you know, the level of insanity is off the charts.
Yes, yes.
The level of psychopathy is off the charts. The very things that they would try to impose upon us to keep us in a state of fear. And yet we're able to see what's going on.
Yeah, because we're students of history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to study the history, and we've done a lot.
So you don't repeat it,
haven't we?
Yep. So you don't repeat it precisely.
You know. So it, but it keeps pointing to who are those silent ones in the background? Why? Well, let me ask this question: why are there so many spacecraft landing on this planet?
Yeah. There you go. Great question, Don. And from all of my understanding, it's because we are approaching a major climax in the history of the Earth, and we clearly know that the Nazis had flying anti-gravity disc, and now the Americans do, the Russians probably do too, because we gave the commies everything. And at the same time, though, then you have these other crafts, and I believe they are the good angels and the bad angels, as the past comes full forward. The ancient, very remote past of this planet comes full forward and will soon manifest the grand conclusion of events that happened a very, very long time ago. And I think we're going to see it in our time frame.
I thought you were going to say something else. I was waiting.
Well, I was going to, if I may, then.
When you say in our time frame, what do you anticipate?
Within 10 years, something grand. It could be way sooner, but something grand is right around the corner. And, you know, I've mentioned in the past, Don, with you, the appearances of Mary in Fatima in particular, and Zaytun Cairo in 6970 for 2 weeks straight. And I try to mention this with other talk show hosts on Patriot Networks, and these particular couple guys, different shows, they really tried to shoot me right down and just get back down to the physical. They want to just deal with everything at the physical level, and that's a big mistake because we're spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
In a material body, living in a physical dimension. And if you don't come to terms with that, you'll never master everything that we have to master as individuals, so that fear does not dominate us, and that we can break loose of this counterfeit satanic system, so we can't control us and crush us, which is by design what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, the whole program is to separate us, or to keep us separate from the creation.
Yes, Don, that's right. And while it does that, then it ultimately does this, Don. It drains us financially, it will drain us spiritually, and it will drain us physically, that eventually we just expire instead of living a long, fruitful life. That's the ultimate aims of this counterfeit satanic system. So like with Mary at Fatima, there's no arguing it was a real event, because when this at the end of a long experience of many months at Fatima, with her appearing monthly to the three kids that were all related, Jacinta, Lucia, and Ferdinand, at the big grand event, there were 70,000 people attending. The original promised event to the kids by Mary didn't happen because the fascist Portuguese government kidnapped the kids. And so when they let them go because they were afraid the 70,000 people were going to mob the place and kill them all for stealing, you know, kidnapping the kids, where the kids were supposed to be at the shrine by this time, 70,000 people were now gathered because they all heard about the big event coming. It was pouring rain, soaking wet. Everything was mud. The people were drenched. And then after Mary said, chastised everybody for basically what happened to the kids by the government, and therefore the big event she promised wasn't going to happen, then the sun dislocates itself from its normal natural position and dances around in the sky, and then there's a kaleidoscope of colors seen by everybody. Then it began to hurtle towards the earth. And then when everybody, 70,000 people on their knees praying, thinking it's the end of the world, literally, then suddenly the sun resumes its natural position and everything's fine. Now, they tell us today it was all mental hallucination by 70,000 people, but what they failed to mention is the physical fact that everything was bone dry immediately after the sun resumed its natural position. Therefore, it couldn't be just mental. It was a physical thing as well,
mm-hmm.
A true miracle.
Metaphysical.
Yes, totally metaphysical, but clearly physical. At the densest level of physicality, because the earth was bone dry, the people's clothes were bone dry, and nobody could refute that fact. And therefore, Mary is a legitimate activity. It's not holograms or anything of mind control sort. It's God activity, the good Lord's activity, as he's setting the stage and preparing for his return, his entrance.
And that did that effectuate a release of the children?
Well, the children were already released because the fascists, after trying to make the kids take bribes like a gold, now these kids were dirt poor, very, very poor. And they were trying to bribe the kids, even with gold, just to confess that they were making up the whole story, which was going on for months already. And the kids refused. They said, we're not lying. And at this point, they couldn't break the kids down, which says something for these three kids. I mean, you know, Mary clearly had to be real to them because they would not break down. And then they feared that since so many people were gathering in the area for the big event, that they were afraid now they would become a mob and just come in, crash the building, kill them, and save the kids, free the kids. So they released the kids based on that. And lastly, pertaining to this particular incident, the three kids, Jacinta and Ferdinand, died as Mary told them they were going to die shortly after, because they all wanted to be with her in heaven. She said, you two will be with me soon, but my son has more plans for Lucy, and she will stay behind. Now, Jacinta is one of the incorruptibles. Here's another physical, miraculous, metaphysical event. When she died, to this day, her body has not decomposed. They're called incorruptibles by the Vatican, who has them secreted away, but they do bring them out for viewing once in a blue moon. And I'm sure if you look up incorruptibles on a search engine, you'll find plenty of photographs, because there's quite a few of them, all with Mary visions, all with Mary experiences, because it was more than a vision. It was a physical event in their lives, and they were all preserved. And so then the question is, well, why are they preserved? And it looks like because when the Lord's second advent occurs, just like it was written in Scripture, many will be resumed back to life where they left off. And these incorruptibles are the symbology, the representation of those that the Lord will raise right back up in those current, their last current body in that time. And they will resume their lives just where they left off. And that seems to be the only rational explanation for these incorruptibles.
I can see people out there. Boy, that would be a great title for a mob movie, The Incorruptibles.
Yeah, that would be a great title for the new Americans
yeah.
And the new United States of America.
You know, and it would be the last such movie. But, you know, we're dealing with crime. There's another example of suppressing information. Trying to discount information. Like you said, 70,000 people were hallucinating.
Right.
In the rain. You know, they always, well, they hadn't invented swamp gas yet. You mentioned Kexburg, and Jake and Hynek came up with that term to debunk photos. There was swamp gas there.
Yeah, it's a good one. They still use that one to this day.
In Pennsylvania, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
No swamps, but they got plenty of swamp gas.
Yeah. Yeah, and they still use that line once in a while. It's funny.
You know, the only swamp gas, I think, that if there is really swamp gas, it's coming out of Washington.
Amen to that.
And a lot of government cronies across the country. That
absolutely.
Politicians are the producers of swamp gas. But they didn't have crash dummies in those days either, did they? Or weather balloons. So
that's right, Don. Yeah. Not that we're aware of. They did have, let's see. The Zeppelin wasn't even around yet. Nope.
No. If one studies Greek history, which they like to call mythology, and just take Greek history for example, and just assume that all the stories are true, it makes a lot of sense. You can connect all the dots.
Yes.
Certainly with what's gone on in this solar system and even in the galaxy, because there are plenty of stories in the Bible that allude to these phenomena. There's the archaeological history that they're discovering, again, in Greece. Giants. And this wasn't giant that David fought that they're digging up. It's just amazing how much of the real history has been presented to us in the form of a lie or a hoax, just to get people's consciousness down as low as possible, so that we can't we can't, by not knowing the truth, it sets us up to be run through fear.
Absolutely. And that's why they had to come up with the BS theory of evolution, to keep us down, trapped in a material world, and not able to lift our eyes and gain vision to the greater expanses of the heavens, and from which we emanate from, and the great power that creates everything originates from.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the nature of evil and Satan, that they would worship a being that promises them everything, only in the end to even betray them.
Right.
It's the antithesis of God. I've said this on past shows. I'm repeating myself, but there may be some new listeners out there. To suppress information, to suppress the things that sustain life and enrich one's life, and you enrich everyone's life, and the world would instantly be a better place to be. But they can't have that.
No.
It
makes them miserable, Don.
Yeah.
They won't be happy if there's no fear. That's their food.
Yes. Now, the fact that they have to do this secretly, or through bribery and blackmail and extortion and murder. Yeah,
that's right, because it's not just fear, Don, like you're just hitting there. It's also misery and suffering. That's their food.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, I was just saying that the fact that they have to do it that way covertly shows that they themselves are of fear.
Absolutely.
And certainly void of conscience in that sense. You know,
absolutely, Don. And that's where that cremation of care ceremony in Bohemian Grove every summer, that confirms that statement, because that ritual is making them accept, let go of your conscience. Just don't worry about it. Just do it and don't even care.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we're out of time. It's been interesting. And, you know, we can always continue this discussion. I appreciate your input, because it's historical in a sense too. There's an aspect of this that's really in history. It's
absolutely
in our literature, and you know, we've been lied to about it. So because someone labels something, you know, to say that Plato was is to be treated as mythology, The stories of the Greek gods and goddesses. They were named by the Greeks, but where were they from?
And that's why, correct.
Yes. Why is it that science can say, well, there are all these huge beings that decayed into oil along with some plants, and there can't be beings from other planets here.
Or other dimensions.
Yeah, where did the dinosaurs come from?
That's right. They are reptilian, aren't they?
The early politicians, maybe. Huh? They evolved into dinosaurs.
Well, you know, I think, Don, when I think of politicians, that photograph I sent you there quite a while back, you post on your website of that human skull farmed out of Pennsylvania in 1814 with horns on its head.
Yes.
There's the politician's origins.
Well, is it a human skull or is it a reptilian skull?
Exactly. That's the question. Precisely.
Yeah.
And, of course, the answer is, I'm sure, it's a reptilian skull. And I just wish, Don, that I could have supplied with you along with that, but I don't have it. It was from the Inquirer in the mid-1900s, just a black and white print on a raggy paper. But I kept it preserved for a long time. I just don't know where it is. If I come across it, I'm getting it to you, because it claimed that, and it's in the Inquirer, so everybody says, Mike, how do you believe it? It's an Inquirer. But I knew there was something to it, and it was before I came across that photograph of that skull from the farmer's field in Pennsylvania in 1814. And it was discussing how these two female archaeologists made a major find, I believe it was in Arizona, on a dig. And they found a huge, like, cemetery of skulls piled up. I mean, you see the photo. If it's legit, talking hundreds, maybe thousands of skulls in big piles, all with horns on their head.
Hmm.
Right. And so I knew there was something to it, and I grabbed that rag paper because I was saying to myself, there is something to this. I was well aware of the ancient Tibetan through Tuesday Labsang Rampa in one of his many books called The Hermit.
Mm-hmm.
When he encountered that blind hermit and he had to help him out while he was traveling. That was part of his mission, to help this old hermit who was apparently a great guy. And but he got blinded, and he had extraterrestrial experiences after that, and they carved out a cave for him to dwell in and set him up so he could survive. And while they were doing that for him, they set him up with some technology so he could see. And they showed him the history of the planet and the original origins of a race of beings, he described to a young Tuesday Labsang Rampa at the time, of a race of beings emanating from the inner sections of the galaxy. And they had tails and horns, and they were very warlike. And they came into our solar system, inhabited one planet originally, which they blew up. That is the asteroid belt of today. That's an old Tibetan legend through Tuesday Labsang Rampa. And so knowing that, and then seeing this photograph and Inquirer of this find in supposedly in Arizona with all these hundreds of thousands of skulls piled up with all with horns, I immediately made the connection. And I knew there was something to it. And then, sure enough, even further down the road, as good old synchronicity will always prevail when you're on the path of truth, and I found that farmer's photograph, and with a skull, human-looking skull, with horns on the head. So there's something to all this, my friend, no question about it.
Well, we're out of time, but I do want to continue this discussion, and I want to thank you for being on the show. We didn't talk about Michael's Anthony's private stock, but if you go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and click on sponsors, you can read about it, especially under the attack we're experiencing due to what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico and in our skies. Michael's got some great products there.
Thank you very much, Don. And I look forward to anybody that comes to me for help, and I don't charge for talking to me or consulting with me. It's all on the house. And I'm sure, like with everybody else, you'll find that I happen to have a particular knack and ability with restoring the body temple's perfect health. And so I appreciate that very much, Don. Thank you. And,
well,
and thanks again for having me on, too.
Yeah, and we're going to have you on in the near future. And if I remember correctly, I think that's the 28th of this month. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, sir, it does.
All right. That's a Tuesday. So a few Tuesdays down the road, Michael will be back with us. Mike, I want to wish you a good evening. Thanks for being on, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Don. Looking forward to the next one, next show with you, and God bless.
You too. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's guest, Mr. Michael Anthony. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for tuning in, also for your questions and comments. And also over at BBS Radio, I want to thank Don Newsom on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.